Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program.
I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times.
This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time.
Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and welcome to the first of a two-part show featuring the life of 82-year-old Clem Gracie. Born on a kitchen table in 1924, Clem talks about his early life with his family in Adelaide. At the tender age of eight, encouraged by his mother, he started playing the piano and hasn't stopped since. In this week's story, Clem shares his not-so-terrific experiences at school and shares his unusual experiences in the army during the war. However, it's his music that features both this week and next, for, as Clem says, he's a rich man because he's full of notes. Musical notes, that is. Incidentally, all the piano playing heard during the show is by Clem. Now, Clem, a man and his music. Well, Clem, if we could start by asking you when you were born and where you were born.
Oh, when? In the year of our Lord, 1924. That makes me, this year I'm going to be 82, apparently. Where?
Mm.
Legend has it that it was on the kitchen table. but I think you're more interested in where the kitchen table was.
First of all, tell us where the kitchen table was.
Yeah, I was born, bred and dragged up in Adelaide. So it was in a suburb of Adelaide. And that's where I've stayed continuously until we moved over here about 13, 14 years ago.
All right, well, let's go back to the really early times. And I'm not going to let you get away with it, Clem, because people listening wouldn't forgive me. The kitchen table, tell us about the legend.
I have heard that, and don't forget, this was 1924.
Right.
And I don't know whether it was very fashionable for people to go to maternity hospital then.
No, mostly home births.
Yes. And I suppose the kitchen table was a convenient place. I've heard of other people of that period being born that way.
Right.
Well, I can't remember it.
No, of course not. Well, what can you remember? What are your earliest memories?
Oh, earliest memories, I've never have had a good memory, except perhaps I've memorised quite a lot of musical things, that's all. We lived in a suburb near Adelaide until I was about four. I had two elder sisters and one younger brother. And we moved up to a place, well, a lot of people might know Belair. And next to Belair is the other end of Belair is called Blackwood. And we moved up to a place near Blackwood, and it was real bush country then.
Yeah, I bet it was.
It's changed now, of course. One of my sisters was a student, a fundamental early student, in fact, at the beginning when the Blackwood Public School was built. So it was and there was only one classroom, and I followed her a couple of years after that.
Did you have fond memories of school?
No. I was going to tell you about my school days.
Good.
They were not very happy because for a number of reasons. 1924. Yeah. Well, first thing I remember after starting school was that the depression started. Nobody had any money. Mostly the Gracies, we had less money than the average, mainly because, I've got to be respectful of my parents, but they were an odd couple. Mum was a rampant Methodist, and she lived the life of a real Methodist too. My dad was just the opposite. His favourite pastime was drinking port wine. Yeah, they stuck together all those years.
Fascinating.
And Dad was a real problem with his port wine. And yet he was what's called a binge drinker.
Mm.
And in between those binges, he was a real gentleman, first class, marvellous person. But you didn't want to know him when he went off the beat.
What was his line of work?
Oh, well, a person like that doesn't have any great line of work. You take what you can get, I suppose, particularly then.
Of course, because of the Depression.
Yes, yes. He called himself a wholesale grocer, but right. he was a bit of everything right. when he could get the job, yeah. And, of course, when he did get a job, he still had this problem of drinking port wine, which didn't help his job, I suppose.
Yeah. So there wasn't much disposable income in the family?
No, very little. And any money that Mum had in the hand that went to the church.
Oh.
And any money Dad had, it went to the publican.
Oh.
Wasn't much left over.
So no.
that was our life. And it really affected the kids quite a bit, really. But still, we all stayed together. That was the point.
Yes.
And a lot of people would break up these days.
Well, obviously, I can begin to understand that some of the problems you might have had at school because of these issues.
Oh,
but
yes.
Was there anything about school that you did enjoy? Was there anything you can look back and go, oh, well, actually, that wasn't bad?
No, well, my parents weren't inclined towards education. They didn't take much interest in it. And I had to leave school at 14, but it was common then.
Yes.
That's the disappointment of my whole life. But I could have liked school if I had have had the right teacher. The last 2 years of teaching, I had a hell of a teacher. He was the very end. The only thing he was good at was belting us with a cane.
Oh,
or
great.
Pulling our hair to stand up. One of those, yes. He wouldn't last long nowadays.
No.
But he was pretty good at it at that time. And he wasn't a good teacher anyway. I heard that. And my brother had him for a couple of years or so. And he and I often rave about this terrible person. Mm. So that didn't help school.
What about outside school as a young boy? What did you do outside school?
When I was in school... there were only two things I was good at. One was the out of tune fife band. It was a terrible band, but it was a musical band, and I used to play for the Penny School concerts on the fife.
Right.
The only other thing I was good at school and played quite well was were marbles. Anyway, I was quite good at that. Well, there were my two best subjects, I might say. They used to have penny concerts, and you had to pay a penny to get in. Well, Mum, the only way I could get in, because if I never had a penny, the only way I could get in was to play I was chosen to play the out of tune fife by myself, unaccompanied, on the stage. You can imagine what sort of a concert it was. There was one old girl in the audience who... Miss Dawkins, her name was, and she took a fancy to my playing, apparently. She offered to teach me piano. That was at the age of 8.
Gosh.
Yeah, and she took me under her wing musically, but she said she'll only take me up as far as she could, which lasted for about a year, 18 months, something like that. My mother, of course, couldn't have her do that for nothing. She insisted that somehow she was paid. And so she sent her Clem to do gardening for Miss Dawkins. And Miss Dawkins' garden stretched from here for about 10,000 miles that way. Perhaps that's the reason why I've always hated gardening. I was there every Saturday morning. And it lasted until I left her after a while. I went to a more legitimate qualified teacher after that.
So you developed a love or a taste for music at a very young age?
Oh, yeah.
Now, where did this come from? I mean, were either of your parents musical?
No, Mum played a few hymns.
That's all she did.
And Dad, he wouldn't know B-flat from B-buggered. So I don't think it came from Dad's side. But anyway, I don't know. I suppose it's in the genes.
Thank you.
Listen to older voices. Ageless Radio.
Any of the other brothers or sisters?
Oh, yes. Well, my kids all had no choice. They all had to learn. And my brother, he had the opportunities, but he was a little bit more lazy than I was. Mm. And he didn't... well, he's done quite well with his music since then. He only had three lessons on the piano, and he either gave up the teacher or she gave him up because he was lazy, I suppose. But very talented. But you've got to have... You've got to have both.
Yes.
And I could say I wasn't much good at anything else, so I was a good subject to teach, I should imagine.
Right.
And at the age of 10, I played for the local Sunday school. And that was rather a marvellous step up for me.
Yeah.
I was doing something that none of the other kids could do. Otherwise, they'd be up there playing for the Sunday school. And my mother, I often wondered how she could afford to pay for me to learn the piano, a legitimate classical piano. And, of course, I worked out very soon that she wanted her Clem to play the pipe organ. But she had enough musical sense to know, or else perhaps she was told, that you don't play the pipe organ unless you have a good grounding on the piano first. So that's how it had to be. But she got her wishes at the age of 14, before my 14th birthday. I had a job playing for a church, a paid job, still 13, at the Brighton Baptist Church. They had a very good... choir master. All I had to do was play. And it was a reasonably good organ. It was a two manual with pedals of about one and a quarter octaves on the pedals and two manuals. So I could play all the classical literature on that. Okay, yeah, well, Glenelg, in January Glenelg, there was a congregational church there, and it was a lofty building, almost cathedral size, and a very, very nice organ. And I learnt organ from that organist there, and of course I had to push my bike from Brighton's the next suburb south from Glenelg.
Right.
Now there's another suburb in between.
But in those days it was quite a journey, obviously.
Oh yeah, there are only sand hills in between Brighton and Glenelg then. And I had to push my bike very early in the morning, and I did have bitumen on the Brighton road. And so it would have taken me about 25 minutes, I suppose, to get there, and another 25 or half an hour to get back. It was a bit of uphill.
Now, the money you earned from that, were you allowed to keep that?
Mum was so poor, I had to give her nearly all the money I had. And when I left school, yes, we all did as we were told as kids in those years.
Mm.
And if Mum wanted the money, she got the money, she gave us a couple of shillings to spend on lollies or ice cream or whatever it was.
Was it a relief for you to leave school and start work?
Oh, yes. I didn't want to. I've always regretted very, very much that I never had a decent general education. It still hurts me, even after all these years.
But that's after the fact, isn't it? If you go back to...
But I had such a bad time at school that I didn't want to go any further.
What did you do, Clem, when you left school?
Well, for the first two or three months, both myself and my brother, we helped the local greengrocer. And whilst I was at school, the one thing I did do most of the day was chew the end of my pencil and dream about selling music at Allen's Music Shop.
Oh, okay.
They had a big store in Adelaide, bigger than what they've got in Melbourne, but it's a branch of Melbourne.
Yeah.
But it's had four or five floors and a basement.
Goodness.
Yes, it was a very nice store, and I dreamt of selling music there one day. And so eventually I had my first suit, I think it was. Well, and then went into and asked for, had enough nerve to go in and ask for the general manager, not the music manager, the general manager.
Yes.
And he was a marvellous bloke, very kind. He was good to me. Up to the first floor, into his office, and he tried to make me as comfortable as possible. I was most uncomfortable because it was something I'd been dreaming about for years, and finally arrived at. So I sat down, and then he said, "Now, tell me about yourself." So I got my Dutch courage up and off I went. I told him I played the organ, the Brighton Baptist Church. I play for everyone who wants to sing there, and they have concerts, and I play for them in the Grundy Hall. I have a few pupils. The first pupil started at 13, gosh, too. So that was a pupil. I might have had two or three by this time. I went on and on and on and told him how brilliant I was, you see. Thinking about it now, he must have thought I was crazy. But anyway, he was very kind. And when I'd finished my All About Myself, he just sat back and he said, well, what we really want is someone who can sell.
Yes.
I never have been the world's best salesman, but that's what I did.
So he gave me the job.
Oh, yes, he gave me the job. Yeah. Oh, yes. The first 2 years I went to the instrument department downstairs, but my aim, I think everyone knew this, was to get into the musical literature, and that's where I wanted to go. And eventually I got there.
Right.
And I spent the first 10 or 11, perhaps even 12 years after leaving school with Allens. And you might wonder, well, I think I could have gone on, but I always had an inkling that I'd like to work for myself.
Mm.
And by that time, I had my qualifications.
And yet, capably survived in Allens for 12 years selling, you must have done a fairly good job.
Yeah, but I'm not a salesman. I knew that, but you didn't have to sell. What happens is people come in, if they want some music, they know what they want.
Right.
Now and again, someone will come in and say, look, there was a piece of music that goes tra-la-la-la-la-la, and it's got a pink cover. Now, you must know that one. And I'd have to say, no, I didn't. Must be a million of them. But on the whole, a person comes in and asks, and they've got the name and the key and everything else about the piece, and it's such and such a publication. And there's a million. You imagine what the stock is in a music place. There was no computer.
No, that's right.
And we had great big large books like that, about 3 inches thick, for different subjects of music, and you'd get them out of them, open them up, and they take up half the counter size of the books.
Goodness.
And find what you want. And they had a big gallery on the ground floor full of music also. You get just millions and millions.
Absolutely.
And millions.
You were born in 24, is that
yeah.
right? Yeah. So by the age of 18, the Second World War was...
Oh, yeah, I was going to tell you about that.
Yeah, what happened there?
If you've got a few more hours to spare, I could tell you about my brilliant military...
This is as good a time as any.
Profession, oh, my God. I was never a patriotic person. But during the Second World War, there were two armies. One was a militia.
Yeah.
They only served within Australia. And there was an Australian Infantry Forces, AIF, where you could serve anywhere between the North Pole and South Pole. But day one, when I went into the army, they had a brilliant, brilliant recruiting officer. Oh, everything rolled up. He wants you to join the AIF. And of course, being of 18, you're easily swayed, I suppose. He went off and said, look, you get a better uniform, you get Australia on your shoulder and this shoulder, and you get better loans for your house when you come out of the army after the war. All the girls will love you, and on he went on and on and on. So I signed. It sounded so good, but none of it ever came to pass. So that lasted for 4 years. I'll give you some idea.
Where did you serve?
Well, I was in the AF. They could have sent me anywhere.
Yes, that's right.
But if you know somebody in the army, you can go places. Day one in the army, I met a man called Fred Stone. Now, Fred was a relic from the previous World War One, and somehow he gave me some very good information, one of which was, now, we all have to have 3 months of military infantry training. We all have to do that. Then you branched out into all sorts of places. Now, Clem, what you must do is, when you're on the rifle range, never, ever hit the target. Because if you hit the target, you will become cannon fodder immediately. And I thought, even at that age, I thought, that's marvellous advice. So I didn't hit the target. I failed just about everything else too. So I was a bit of a problem for them. At the end of 3 months, I think that I can just imagine what happened in the orderly room. They wondering where to put us all.
Yes.
And, oh, here comes Gracie. Oh, he failed, and he failed this and failed that. And he was a no-hoper. So they put me into a unit, employment unit of some sort. I forgot the correct name of it. Labour Battalion, it was, a Labour Battalion. And my job in the Labour Battalion was to load up trucks with logs of wood and then sit on top of the logs of wood and they'd take you somewhere else and then you get out and unload the wood. Well, you can imagine what I thought of that. Mm. And you can imagine the type of person I was with.
Yes.
In that unit, they put all the drunks, the no-hopers, yes, the illiterates and everything else, and me.
Yes, and you created the cross on your own back then.
Oh, well, I couldn't imagine there were people like that or jobs like that. No. So anyway, that lasted for about 6 or 8 weeks.
Gosh.
And then one night I saw an officer approaching me. He had an officer's uniform on, but he was a Red Shield man. Red Shield, he belonged to the Salvation Army. Salvation Army Red Shield man, and he had this officer's uniform, and he said to me, because I knew him, and if you know someone in those sort of places, you get somewhere. Yeah, what the hell are you doing here, Clem? That's what I want to know. He said, don't worry, boy, I'll have you out of this tomorrow. This is right near next to Adelaide, a place called Warradale. I'm leaving, I'm in charge of the Red Shield hut here, but I want to go to another hut, and you can take over from me in this hut. And he said, I'll make sure it happens by tomorrow, if we possibly can. He said, I've only got to get one other person's permission, and that's the camp commandant. Now, so he went to the camp commandant, and as soon as the camp commandant said, heard that my name was Clem Gracie, he said, oh, Clem. It appears that he had a son who sat next to me at school, and we cheated off each other. So that's all right. Tell Clem that's quite all right. And tell Clem he can eat in the sergeant's mess. And I was only a private. I had a few stops on my arm the next day. And they let me eat in the sergeant's mess. So I was waited on. Furthermore, that lasted for 3 years. They forgot about me. And I wasn't going to remind them. Oh, by the way, when I was A1.
Tune in next week for the second and final part of Clem's story, which includes the conclusion of his army experiences, and we learn how he met his wife Margaret. But with her in Sydney and him in Adelaide, it was an interesting courtship. But once again, it's Clem's music that features heavily in the show, so join Clem and I next week on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.